Hey, gang. Welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN. It is the best radio station in the whole wide world, so you want to go there and click on the donate button and send a donation. You also want to go to nationalbugle.com and peruse the articles and download the CoCertified app because it's the best app in the whole wide world. It will help you lead a non-kosher certified lifestyle. Remember, you are what you eat, and you want to be non-kosher certified. Today, I have for the first time Paul Stevenson, who is not a stranger to those of you who listen to the show preceding mine, Beyond the Official Narrative with Richard Carey. So, Paul, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Okay.
Yeah, it's great to be with you, Patrick. Sorry, my internet dropped for a second there, but anyway.
No problem. All right. There's a lot of stuff going on. We'll go straight into it. But you're on Richard's show about once a week, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. And you discuss all sorts of things with him.
Yeah, I'm on Mondays with him. And then I also do a show on revisionmedia.org, which is a smaller network. But I'm on there on a Monday as well. That's 10 p.m. Central Time. And then I'm on with Richard at midday Central Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time. We discuss similar stuff to yourself, Patrick. I occasionally, because your show's on immediately after mine on a Monday, so I do occasionally, you know, stay tuned in and listen to you and to Mark. So we're all discussing very similar things, really. I think we're probably in agreement with most things.
Sure, and I hear you on Richard's show often. I'm often, sometimes I get a chance to walk my dogs during that time, and I'll listen to your show. After my show's over, I listen on the archive. But anyway, so you're over there in the British Isles in Great Britain and in Ireland. One question before we get into the important stuff. Father Ted, is it the greatest sitcom ever, or is it subversive, or both?
I think the answer to that question is both. Because I remember when I was younger in my early 30s, we used to watch Father Ted all the time. In fact, me and a friend of mine had almost like a tradition where we would meet up and we would go out for a few beers on a Saturday night, and we would always watch Father Ted before we left the house, you know. It sort of put us in good spirits. But in the preceding years, and as things got more serious, you'd have to conclude that it did also contribute, I think, to the spiritual decline and in many cases the hatred of the Catholic Church. At best, something like Father Ted really, you know, made a bit of a mockery of it, of the Catholic Church and that whole spiritual or that religious element of Ireland. So I don't think it really helped. I don't think it helps any nation to become secular. Because I mean, if you look at, for example, some of Ford's work, you know, the Jews talked in there about secularizing the United States and then fill the void with Jewish revolutionary ideas, and that's exactly what's happened.
Yeah. Now the star Dermot, what was his name, first name I think was Dermot McSomething.
Yeah, he passed away quite young, didn't he, from a heart attack.
Right. After the third season, he had an auto accident and passed away, and that was that.
Mm.
Do you think he was just being funny, or do you think that he actually was trying to be subversive and had, you know, bad motives?
Well, I think it was it sort of encapsulated, I think, to a certain extent. I mean, I don't think you can actually blame Father Ted in a way, because there was an appetite for it.
And this is like kind of like 96 to 98 or something like that, when this was.
Yeah. Filmed. Yeah. It sort of typified and sort of encapsulated, really, I think, what a lot of people were thinking about the Catholic Church anyway, because it had kind of lost its backbone and strength in people's lives, and there's a lot of people who resented it, you know. And there's a lot of people who would call themselves Catholics, you know, like where I grew up, it was a Catholic area, and you had a lot of people who were Catholic atheists, you know, and there was a lot of people who didn't believe or were agnostic or whatever and didn't go to church. And so I think it was kind of almost a bit of a release valve for a certain amount of underlying resentment towards the Catholic Church. But there was a lot of aggressive propaganda against the Catholic Church as well by the BBC and the usual MSM people, you know. You know, cause they did their best to portray the Catholic Church as if pretty much, if you, you know, the priests do nothing but just abuse and sexually abuse children. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, they really, really, you know, went to town on that. And of course, those crimes were horrendous and disgusting and shameful, but they really, really did push that. And that sort of narrative, along with Father Ted, you know, didn't obviously do the Catholic Church any good.
I remember one joke from Father Ted where somebody had brought up the pedophile stuff, and he said, you know, if they, let's say there's 100 million priests in the world, and only 5% are pedophiles. That's only 5 million pedophile priests.
Yeah.
And it was funny, but
well, yeah, exactly. But you know, I don't know if you've noticed this, but comedy generally is a way that Jewish media and Hollywood, with some of their media, is a way where they can really push degeneracy by normalizing it through comedy. I mean, how many movies have you seen where there's these, like, you know, these 40-year-old women out going getting drunk, and it's always increasingly sort of, you know, sexual, and a lot of this stuff is kind of like, you know, normalized and presented as innocuous because it's like you're laughing at it, you know.
Well, but yeah, I hardly ever watch movies, but I watched The Daily Show with Jon Stewart for pretty much the entirety that there was a Daily Show with Jon Stewart. And he was reasonably funny. He wasn't as funny as his predecessor, Craig Kilborn, although Craig Kilborn didn't write his own jokes, and I guess Stewart did. But from the very beginning, I could see Stewart was subversive in many ways, and he was very, very Jewish in many ways. He wasn't really obnoxious like a lot of them are, but I mean, a lot of Jewish comedians. He did exactly what you're talking about. He normalized all these things. He was always using like pornographic terms. And I think on the show with Mark on Monday, I said the word reach around and then commented, I don't even know what it means. I just heard Jon Stewart use it over and over again. And I know
what does it mean?
I don't know. I haven't bothered to look it up. But and you know why? It's probably not so bad, but once I looked up something that Jon Stewart said, and I almost threw up. And I could say something about it, but I'm not going to, because I don't want my viewers to throw up, or my listeners to throw up.
Fair enough.
Yeah. So.
Well, yeah, it happens a lot. It does. They use comedy that way. I forget who it was I listened to a while ago, and it was years ago, but they did identify that is a Jewish thing. You know, it is another Jewish tactic as to how they, you know, social engineer and how they can, you know, subvert the culture through comedy, you know?
There was a, I think it was a Haaretz article, David Duke refers to it often, and I think it was written by a Princeton professor of Judaic studies or something, and he talked about how Jewish comedians like Larry David and Sarah Silverman were, I guess, promoting Jewish values by undermining America's family-friendly culture. I think that's pretty close to a quote from, you know, like the title and subtitle of that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they hate Christianity. I mean, that Sarah Silverman is just a complete and utter reprobate, if ever there was one. I mean, she stood up there. I remember, listen, you know, you could imagine this if the shoe was on the other foot, or if this was said about Muhammad or any you know, anybody who, in the Jewish faith. But she was up there on the stage. It's quite an infamous, you know, sort of piece of comedy, if you could call it that, where she was saying, you know, they blame the Jews for killing Christ. Well, good. I'd kill him again. Something like that. And yeah. She goes, I'm one of the few people who said who says that it wasn't the Jews, it was the blacks. And but anyway, she said, you know, good, I'd kill him again, you know, to laughter. I mean, this is an abomination in Western Christian countries, or what was previously a Christian country. And before the Jews arrived in earnest in the United States and they flooded in from Eastern Europe and Russia, you know, there was a tremendous sort of precautionary mood and an attitude of severe circumspection when it came to the Jews as their reputations preceded them, because of their European, history. But they got control of the media very quickly, and within a century, fast forward, boom, you have this sort of stuff being acceptable, and you have some Jew up on the stage saying, good, I'd kill Christ again. I mean, that took them a century to get to that point, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And just regarding John Stewart, perhaps my view is a bit warped because I did watch him, but I felt he was more responsible for gay marriage than any other single person in the United States, that he was pushing that for years and years. And I think he normalized it. He took it from a rather fringe position to something that was mainstream enough that when the Supreme Court, because it was, you know, this wasn't the voters. No voters ever voted for gay marriage. This was all through the courts and ultimately the Supreme Court. I think that he had more to do with it than anyone else. That's just, I can't prove it, but that's my personal feeling.
Oh, well, you know, him and others. I mean, I've interviewed E. Michael Jones quite a few times, and, you know, Mike has said a couple of times, he said, you know, you say, when I say the Jews were responsible for gay marriage, they call me a racist and anti-Semite. He said, but when they say it, they get a pat on the back.
Joe Biden famously said it to a Jewish audience. You know, we have you to thank for this transformation. And I think this is when he was vice president. And I think the response from the Jewish audience was kind of like, shh, shh, don't talk. Yeah. And that's the one thing about the old Joe Biden is he had foot and mouth disease and, you know, he blurted things out, and that was something useful about him. One of the things he blurted out was how our allies, this is speaking to, I think, the Harvard Kennedy School back when he was vice president, our allies they keep funding ISIS. They keep assisting ISIS. And he blurted that out. He blurts out a lot of things. So maybe this is a good segue into what's going on now in the Middle East. You've got, you know, every few years you get this massive orgy of Israeli violence against the hapless Palestinians, especially since they from Gaza, and can you just use that as a target practice?
Yeah. Well, as I say, it's like, you know, this is sort of presented like a war. It's not a war. I mean, the Palestinians, I'm from Northern Ireland. I know a thing or two about terrorism. And, you know, the Palestinians and what they have there, you're not talking about an organization which were as sophisticated or the well-oiled machine that the provisional IRA were. You know, you could call that a war because, you know, the IRA almost actually murdered Margaret Thatcher. They blew up number 11 or 12. They just missed her. But
there is no such threat to Israel in that regard. You know, it's like the typical thing is you have a few kids throwing rocks, and these rockets that occasionally hit something, and maybe like two Israelis get injured or one Israeli person dies, and then they come out and, you know, it's just a bloodbath ethnic cleansing operation in Palestine. So it's not a fair fight. And as you say, I remember, I think the last time it was the end of 2014, it was just this, every so often you have this kind of like ethnic cleansing operation that goes on there. And it really isn't, you know, an actual, you know, war. It's just a one-sided bloodbath against the Palestinians. You're stuck in that little strip of land. I mean, it's horrendous, you know?
The land, the Gaza Strip, is about twice the area of the District of Columbia, you know, Washington, D.C., and it's got a bit more than twice the population. So if you've ever been to Washington, D.C., you know it's very, very urban. Well, that's what Gaza is. Okay, so it doesn't have farmland to support itself. I mean, they do try to grow some crops there, but this is extremely densely populated, twice the size. It's like, take Washington, D.C., double it, stick it end to end, and that's Gaza. It's a giant open-air prison, constantly being bombarded. You know, you hear about, like, these big orgies of Israeli violence against it whenever you have, say, what you said, some rockets being shot off. But there's a constant background of Israeli target practice against the Gazans, Israeli tormenting of the Gazans. You know, they shoot at their little fishing boats. They do. This is going on constantly, and it never makes any news.
No, and exactly.
It's done, I guess, in part just to provoke the rocket retaliation here and there, the bottle rocket retaliation, which then gives them carte blanche for these types of operations.
Well, the Zionist way, the Israeli way, is basically get the retaliation in first. That's how they think. And as you say, so much of it's not reported. I mean, they are constantly poking Syria and having operations going on in Syria. Mm-hmm. And occasionally, you know, you might get, I think recently there was a Syrian missile managed to penetrate the dome defense in Israel, which you and the United States taxpayer pay for. And then that makes the news as if Syria had just like started an aggression against Israel, you know, but the other, you know, God knows how many attacks which preceded the eventual retaliation, you know, it just gets flipped in its head as if, you know, as if Israel is now having to defend itself, you know. I mean, they are the most aggressive, you know, group of people in the Middle East, without a doubt, and they have completely destabilized that whole region. And, you know, it's not just what happens there. It's like I cringe, and it frustrates me beyond belief when I see, we go to some of these rallies over here, and you get, you know, these Zionist flags being waved at, like, sort of, you know, sort of more right wing kind of rallies. You know, people like Tommy Robinson and those sorts of people, these kind of like cucks who seem to think that, you know, we have to hate everybody in the Middle East because we have to stand by Israel, you know?
Yeah. Okay, well, we're up on the break. We'll be right back.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now, but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. with all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
We are back, and we're talking about what's going on in the Middle East, and you had mentioned a Syrian missile that had managed to penetrate the Iron Dome, and I don't know how effective the Iron Dome is, but what I do know is that for most of the past decade, the Israeli Air Force has been flying sorties with impunity over Syria, often on a daily basis. Yeah, a couple of years ago, seeing some reliable data, and it was clear that it had been going on on a daily basis for quite some time. And you know, there's an article I sent to you, and I'm sure you've read it. And yeah, there was a reference in the article to, you know, Russia went over there to prop up the Syrian government. But even then, it is still, I guess, through Iranian mediators, I don't know how that works, coordinating with Israel so that the Israelis Air Force and the Russian Air Force don't wind up shooting each other. And a couple of times it's come very close to just that.
Yeah. Well, you know, Russia's got its own interest in that region. And, you know, the only reason that Israel and, you know, their main backers in the U.S. and the NATO allies, of course, haven't managed to displace Assad in Syria is because of Russia. Otherwise, he would have fallen like, you know, Saddam Hussein and Gaddafi and everyone else. So there's a problem there. And that whole region is just a powder keg for, you know, potential sort of wider conflict, you know, because that it could start World War III there. But, you know, even without that, you know, we have to, as a result of that, you know, there's a lot of people displaced there. So you've got these Zionists who, you know, are displacing a lot of people in the Middle East. And then they're funneled up, you know, sometimes helped by these Israeli, you know, NGOs and things. There was a famous piece where they were sort of shipping them across and telling them how to get benefits and, you know, helping them across and into Europe, into Greece. And, you know, and of course you've got the all the Jewish groups, all of the big major Jewish groups support mass immigration. So they're all displaced there. And then they funnel them up into Europe, you know. So there is that element to these wars as well, you know, and they blew a hole in North Africa.
The Syrian war in particular played that role. It's very interesting to note, though, that the Gazans have not been flooding. Maybe they don't have the choice, but the Gazans have been digging in. The Palestinians in the West Bank have been digging in their heels. They have not been flooding into Europe.
Oh, no, not the Palestinians, but we're talking about the wider conflict.
Yes.
And there's a lot of Syrians, and there actually is quite a lot of people even, you know, come over here from Iran and things like that. And also sub-Saharan Africa, because there's with the Libya situation, they just blew a hole in the north of Africa for a corridor there.
Right.
And there's human trafficking goes on in there. And that's a big problem with sub-Saharan Africans coming up into Europe as well, because Gaddafi held, you know, kept stability in that region, you know. And there is that element to these wars in the Middle East as well. A lot of people end up in Europe, you know. You can be guaranteed they don't go to Israel. Most people just end up in Europe or else, you know, they go somewhere else in the Middle East, I guess, you know.
Okay, so I sent you this article, and it's from The Express. This seems to be an English paper. You're familiar with it?
Yeah. One of the better ones, you know, but still.
Okay. All right. And the headline is, Putin told Netanyahu Russia could have military clashes with Israel before Palestinian row. That's pretty serious. Now, there are people who will say that, well, for instance, the fact that Russia has been there's been some coordination with Israel to avoid conflicts in the skies over Syria proves that Russia is really that Putin is really an Israeli agent or whatever. But, you know, Putin's been operating in the real world. He's managed to stay in control of Russia and keep Russia pretty much working for the betterment of the Russian people and away from global homo. So I have a pretty positive view of Putin. I think he's a pragmatist, and he's got a, would you say, a narrow row to hoe? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I admire the man. I mean, he's turned that country, he's turned it around. And, you know, he really reinstated the Orthodox Church there as well, and give financial incentives to, you know, and breaks for the Orthodox Church. And I think there are financial incentives for marriage and the family. So Putin's done some very positive things to strengthen his country. And, you know, the sort of aggression, you know, it's so ironic, you know, because if you look at the Russian border, it's just like, you know, crammed full of NATO troops. And then they talk about Russian aggression. You know, God forbid you should defend your own borders, you know.
That's right. Well, listen, we have another break, but we'll be right back.
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Extendivite 7 herb formulation is approved to help maintain cardiovascular health and help lower blood lipid levels in adults. Extendivite is made from hawthorn, garlic, valerian, cayenne, bilberry, ginkgo biloba, and milk thistle. The herbs in Extendivite have been chosen for their ability to help with overall health. Many people have reported improved energy and stamina in just a few months. If you think you could feel just a little bit better, then Extendivite may just be for you. Extendivite is an all-natural supplement. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a two-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
It's happening, ladies and gentlemen. We here at RBN are working with Front Sight Firearms Training Institute to bring our audience the best in combat, tactical, and defensive firearms training. Whether you're a private citizen who is new to firearms, or you have a concealed weapon permit, and want a level of training that surpasses what you've received from your local gun range, Front Sight provides priceless education and skills taught by seasoned law enforcement, military, and private citizen instructors to levels that far exceed law enforcement and military standard. With nearly a million responsible citizens trained from every town, city, and state from across the United States, Front Sight has bolstered the Patriot movement to a whole new level. Contact Dan Sutterfield by phone at 573-762-2356 or 573-465-2356, or shoot him an email at domedan, D-O-M-E-D-A-N, at hotmail.com. This is a limited time opportunity. Don't miss it.
Sayonara, lota to kamisaki.
We are back. So you were mentioning the Russian border, and that's the other thing, because even when the Middle East was a bit quieter a couple of months ago than it is now, I was already very alarmed at what was going on in the international scene. There was there's a lot going on around Ukraine. It seemed you had the president of the Ukraine saying, oh, well, we should develop nuclear weapons. You had the American press ramping up the anti-Russia and anti-Putin hate. And then, of course, you also have other elements of, or even the same elements of the American press ramping up anti-China hate. And are we headed to World War III?
You know what? You know, I think we are, because this whole COVID thing as well, you know, I think part of the narrative is already in place that, you know, those horrible communists in China, and they started the coronavirus. And I think we're in the early stages of the destruction of the dollar. I think that's going to end up not being the world reserve currency for very much longer. And when that happens, I think they'll take us to war and bring in their big reset, because the Federal Reserve, is basically in the final stages of just sucking the last little bit of blood out of the United States. And that will, in my opinion, be the obliteration of the dollar, because the money printing can't stop. They're not going to raise interest rates, and they're just going to inflate that debt away, and the dollar will suffer, you know. And there's going to be tremendous, you know, consequences for that for the United States, because you have benefited from having the world reserve currency status, but you'll suffer more for not having it, you know, because the Chinese hold so many of the dollars. And, you know, they're going to try and get rid of them and get rid of those. And eventually, I think it's going to be, you know, an actual hot war against China. That's I think we're warming up to that, you know.
That's a real worry. And a lot of the American population has, they've been... I would call it squirreled, where, you know, there's a lot of problems going on, and then you say squirrel, and they look somewhere else. And of course, China's not behind the coronavirus masks and lockdowns and all of this oppression. And yeah. I don't really know where the coronavirus came from. Maybe it leaked out of a Wuhan lab. Maybe it was brought to Wuhan by nefarious American actors and released there. Maybe it's something else.
The Mossad, probably.
Excuse me?
Yeah, the Mossad or the CIA, I would think, would probably be more likely than the Chinese.
Yeah, and the thing is, the coronavirus itself isn't really that big of a problem, because it's not that, like, you know, if it was a bioweapon, what kind of bioweapon is that that kills the elderly pensioners but leaves your military age people, good, you know, healthy military age people there to fight? It's kind of, you know, it's kind of the opposite of what you would expect.
Yeah, it's a bioweapon that kills you if you're 140 or you need a crane to lift you out of bed in the morning, you know?
Yeah, yeah. So it's not the coronavirus that's the problem. It's the response to the coronavirus, and that hasn't been unleashed on us by the Chinese, and certainly the fake American election wasn't the Chinese who did that. But yet, I would go to some of the Stop the Steal rallies, and there was always a contingent of anti-Communist Party Chinese there. Sometimes they were the main people there. And so there are other groups who have an anti-China agenda, Jews who want to scapegoat someone else, who want to deflect. But, you know, you've got some like Falun Gong people. The Falun Gong people played a very, very large role in the Stop the Steal, and it was for the most part a positive role, because nobody else was covering it. Some of these rallies would have had nobody show up if it wasn't for the Falun Gong, but they had their own agenda.
Yeah, I mean, this whole narrative, you get it over here, and again, it's coming from these kind of centrist sort of conservative types, the Fox News listeners, the Nigel Farage, you know, followers, and, you know, You would tend to agree with these people on some things. You know, they're mildly pushing back on immigration and et cetera. But, you know, they're always quick to point out how, you know, much solidarity they have with Jews and how much, you know, they hate anti-Semitism and all the rest of it. But these are the same people who have this narrative that those communist Chinese... Let's get something straight. China's not a communist country anymore. It's not in the way... It's not like Mao Zedong is you know... You know, and they are actually producing stuff. And what's happening is, and the Americans and the West import so much stuff from China, and we send them bits of paper. We send them money, which is increasingly, you know, losing value. Meanwhile, they're doing all the work. Well, all they've got to do is produce for their own people and stop sending it to us, because we're not producing anything over here. Not really. It was service sector economies. And if we went to war with China, think about that. A situation where you've got a collapse of the dollar, a war with China, you're going to get a lot of starving people and a lot of people living in poverty, because all that stuff's not going to be coming in from China anymore. And so that's not a good deal for China. So this and the whole idea that they're over there, they're some sort of, you know, communist country where they're, you know, you don't have any liberties or freedom. So what are we going to fight a war with China for? Our great freedom loving West values? What freedoms? I mean, people have been in lockdown for the last year. We're told to wear masks. We're told.
Huh? Yeah. People have been in lockdown. It's a joke. We used to be told you're live free or die, better dead than red. We used to be told all these things, and now we're being told we have to give up our freedom because somebody might get the flu.
Yeah, exactly. You know, this great, you know, oppressive China. Well, you know, I'm not really sure that I would. You know, I spoke to Mark about this actually. You know, their social credit score system. Yeah, Mark Collett. And they actually, you know, reward sort of good behavior because it's sort of designed for social cohesion and stuff like that. But our social credit score will be basically, if you're not a COVID-loving, degenerate Bolshevik, you will be persecuted. You know, you're going to be part of the dissenter group, which will, you know, be persecuted if you're not towing the line and you're not towing the narrative. So, I mean, this whole notion that we are somehow a, you know, a liberal sort of democratic, you know, freedom-loving West is a pile of nonsense. The Bolsheviks have been marching through the institutions for 50 or 60 years at least, and, you know, and basically they run the show now, you know?
Mm-hmm. So I went to China, and I went all over China at a time where you could say it was basically Maoist. Mao was dead by then, and Deng Xiaoping, who was the really the father of modern China, the father of successful China. He was in control, but the economic reforms, which were introduced slowly and, you know, piece in, like regionally by piecemeal, they hadn't gone very far yet. So I saw exactly what Maoist China was like, at least economically, and it didn't work. It was like China was Africa level poverty. I saw people living in caves. When I went into people's houses who weren't living in caves, and the caves actually are probably nicer, but the houses didn't have floors. They had dirt floors, right? It was extremely poor. Now it is very middle class. And so, you know, one of the hallmarks of communism as we thought about it in the 20th century was it didn't work, right? It was state ownership of the means of production, and often more than just the means of production, and central planning. And yeah. China has to, for the most part, done away with both of those. There's a certain amount of planning, but it's not comprehensive central planning. There's a certain amount of state ownership, but there's an awful lot of private ownership and a very thriving stock market. So it's not communism as we thought of it in the 20th century, and it does work. So maybe it's
a
socialist.
Well, I think, well, I don't even know how you would describe it, what they've done, but they're certainly capitalist. I mean, you know, and they're producing a lot of stuff, but they've still maintained that kind of collectivism, which is kind of foreign to sort of like, you know, more libertarian type nations that the West used to be known for. So they still maintain that, but they are way more capitalist than they used to. As you say, this idea where people keep referring to, you know, the communist Chinese, that's just propaganda. These are slogans because, you know, we know the average person knows that communism's bad, or, you know, because that's kind of in our DNA to some extent. But we've been becoming increasingly, you know, communist and socialist anyway. I mean, just look at the last year with the amount of restrictions on your freedom, and you have all these companies bailed out. You have the privatization of profits and the socialization of losses. You've got all these stimulus checks going out and stuff. I mean, how is that a capitalist country? I mean, that is pure socialism, you know?
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, and they call China communist. And then they say that the Democrats or the Black Lives Matter are communist. And I think there is, and of course, what the Democrats or Apple and Microsoft and Google and these people, what they're trying to do to in the United States doesn't bear a whole lot of resemblance to what the Chinese are doing within their own country. But I think it's kind of a branding scheme, and it's in order to link our problems to China, when, of course, what's going on here isn't being driven by China. It's being driven by our Jewish dominated elite. But there's a point I'd like to make. 30 years ago, I knew a professor. His name was Moshe Levin. He was a Jewish guy, and he's old. He was old at the time, and he had written, he was like the leading authority on Lenin's new economic policy, the NEP, the NEP. And in the 20s, in the early 20s, after war communism, after the Civil War, Lenin relinquished an awful lot of control over the economy, just kept what was called the commanding heights, banking and transportation, but it let everything else be basically in private hands. And this went on during the 20s, and it actually was very successful for a while until they embarked on, you know, the Jewish left's idea of collectivization of agriculture, and then everything became horrible again. But he was the expert on it, and he said that in the early to mid 1980s, the Chinese they translated every single book he had ever written. And so there was this very conscious effort by the Chinese to study this new economic policy the Soviets had for just like 5 years or so, but it was successful for them. And it was something very different. I just thought I'd throw that out there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's been a spectacular turnaround what's happened in China. I mean, the infrastructure built there. I don't know. Do you ever see some of the bridges that those guys do over there and how quickly they go up as well? I mean, it's spectacular. It's staggering, really, how they've developed some of these massive, big, you know, huge bridges and things like that. The amount of steel that they use, you know, is just incredible. But,
Is that whenever I see a picture of a Chinese city that I've visited, it bears absolutely no resemblance to what I saw.
No.
It's been, the entire country has been completely transformed.
Exactly. Yeah.
35 years.
Yeah. And all that poverty you were talking about, you know, there's a lot of those people who lived in the country and they lived in those little huts and stuff like that. There's a lot of people been lifted out of poverty in China, and there is a growing middle class there. This idea was just presented. And I think that's part of the war drums that are already starting to bang to demonize China. And of course, China will ally with Russia, and if the Jewish West can, murder Russians en masse, they will be glad to do so, because they've still got their little ancient, you know, resentments against the Russians for how they were treated back in the old days, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so I mean, China. Whatever you think of the Chinese Communist Party, Chinese Communist Party, that government over the past 35 years has lifted more people out of poverty than any government in the history of humanity. And that's just a fact.
And by the way, as I say, you know, the Chinese are sending, you know, the West a lot of goods, real stuff that they're manufacturing. And for what? For currencies which are, you know, probably not long for this world, so they could just produce for themselves. You know, the Chinese people don't need to be sitting, you know, working their asses off to send people in the West goods so we can sit around and people can spend their stimulus checks, you know.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've been following the Asian economies for decades, and yeah. You know, the so-called Japanese miracle after World War II. I mean, Japan was actually already pretty developed even before its contact with the West as a non-modern economy. It was pretty developed. But, you know, from the ashes of World War II, they embarked on this policy of, it was a combination of import-led growth and export. I mean, import substitution and export-led growth. So where they exported like crazy to the United States, they protected their own market. And their economy and their industry grew like crazy. And then, of course, it destroyed the American steel industry, the American auto industry, created these massive trade deficits because Japan's a big country. Well, then South Korea, which is a lot smaller than Japan, Taiwan, did the same thing. And it also, you know, was a hit on the American economy. Then when China started opening up, I thought there's absolutely no way that China can follow these footsteps because, you know, it's got 10 times the population of Japan. there's no way it can do this because America could never support. Well, the thing is, they did this same strategy, not just to America, but to Europe, to Japan, to the whole entire world, and they actually pulled it off. Well, now they are developed. What they, you know, they got more than just pieces of paper. They got technology. They got, and now they are developed, and they really don't need, like you're saying, they've got their own domestic market now. They don't need the West. They do need, you know, raw materials from Africa and whatnot, but they can get all this, and they can get it all through trading. But we're up at the last break. We'll be right back.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2 today.
Extendivite 7-herb formulation is approved to help maintain cardiovascular health and help lower blood lipid levels in adults. Extendivite is made from hawthorn, garlic, valerian, cayenne, bilberry, ginkgo biloba, and milk thistle. The herbs in Extendivite have been chosen for their ability to help with overall health. Many people have reported improved energy and stamina in just a few months. If you think you could feel just a little bit better, then Extendivite may just be for you. Extendivite is an all-natural supplement. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a two-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with
Extendivite. Hey gang, Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and the new app, KosherTified, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher-certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the KosherTified app can make a huge difference for your future. The home aisles, and there is something going on in British prisons, a trend. Why don't you tell us about it?
Well, yeah, there was an article came out recently that I saw, and there was someone interviewed. I haven't got her name, but it's the usual sort of young, straight out of university, completely indoctrinated talking about apparently 1 in 5 prisoners now in the UK which is what, 20%, are actually imprisoned for far right extremism. And then we had Stephen Pollard, the editor of the Jewish Chronicle, on talking about anti-Semitism and how we must stamp out. You know, he was on talk radio after staggeringly talking about anti-Semitism after the latest bloodbath in the Israelis against the Palestinians. But, you know, he was saying we must stamp out extremism, and it's time to take action. And of course, this is all designed for Stephen Pollard and his little crowd, where they, you know, to deter any pushback and or criticism or resistance of their genuine extremism. Now, we're talking about a group of people, as I said, every major Jewish organization supports mass immigration. And along with our perfidious political elites, they have, in less than about 50 years, irrevocably altered the demographic anatomy of the West. Now, that's extremism. But this is very dangerous, because what they've done is, it's like, I don't know of any of these far-right terrorist groups or these far-right extremist groups. I just don't know of any of them. You know, I come from Northern Ireland. I know a thing or two about terrorists. And, you know, having a discussion stating that you don't like mass immigration or you think it's counterintuitive to the national interest or whatever does not constitute being a terrorist. But that's what they've done. They've basically significantly lowered the threshold to what sort of constitutes and qualifies a terrorist. And it basically is anything which is dissent to the establishment and any kind of threat or resistance or pushback to that establishment. So it's not that we have all these new, you know, terrorists, far-right terrorist groups. It's just they've lowered the threshold as to what it is. So, but they're trying to make, you know, they're trying to create this narrative. To me, this whole white supremacy thing's a myth. You hear it out there all the time. People think it's this kind of ghost-like kind of, you know, nobody ever actually sees it, but it's apparently it's there. It's the greatest. I mean, Biden recently said it was the greatest threat that the United States faces.
Yeah. It's such a joke.
It is a joke. I mean, it's just literally a creation of the media. I mean, it doesn't exist.
No, it doesn't exist. It's a complete boogeyman, and yet it gets used for very nefarious purposes. It gets used to crack down. It gets used to put Nick Fuentes on a do not fly list. And it's we have to find a way to push back against this.
Yeah, and of course, you know, these white supremacists, they must be really, really, you know, shabby amateur terrorists, because the security forces always seem to sort of foil their attacks, because we've never actually seen a white supremacist attack. So, you know, the Muslims can pull one off every now and again, but not those white supremacists. They happen to catch them and then just put them in prison before they actually pull the trigger, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of, to the extent there are plans, I'm sure you'll find that the plans were actually provoked by FBI or other intelligence services.
Yeah.
Which is the case in the U.S. Capitol, but that's for another story. At any rate, we're up at the end of the show, but I want to thank you so much, Paul Stevenson, for coming on with me.
It was a pleasure to talk to you, Patrick. I've listened to you for years, mate. I think I came across you maybe 7 or 8 years ago, so I've listened to you intermittently for a long time, so it's a real pleasure to speak to you, mate.
Oh, well, likewise, and I look forward to having you come on again.
All right, thank you, Patrick. I'd love to.
And I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.
Namida ga kobore nai yoni omoitasu haru no hi hitori pochi no yore ue o muite aruko.
Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we have been building our online store. Well, we have been focusing on bringing you the best talk show host in the country. Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we also want our listeners to have products they can use every day and in times of emergency. We have added new products each week to our store. Your support of this network, plus products at the best prices, is a win-win situation. Check out our new store. Go to our website, republicbroadcasting.org, and click on the online store located at the top of our website. Together, we can continue to grow RBN and help our listeners prepare for the future. go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on our online store or call us.
800-724-2719, extension 3. 800-724-2719, extension 3.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.